Welcome everybody to another episode of the Sleepwire Podcast. That's right, this is the Sleepwire Podcast coming back for you guys, and I'm excited because I'm your host Nick Sono, of course, and with me today is my awesome co-host, the Professor Chris, and we got a really special guest for you guys today. He is a writer and editor from NFL.com. He is a co-host on the Fantasy Hipsters Podcast. And he is the creator of the hashtag Reception Perception. Please welcome our very special guest today, Matt Harmon. Matt, thank you so much for being on the show today, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. It's kind of the period in the off season where actually, and it's surprising, we are getting kind of a lot of news the last few days, especially about wide receivers. And it's been fascinating to find all that out at once. But normally this is kind of the time, you know, a little bit the calm before the storm, like training camp hasn't quite hit yet. We're seeing some takes brewing on the timeline here and there, but it has been, it's a good time to talk to you guys. You know, it's been a fun off season so far, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's incredible the amount of news that's broken out. I mean, between Jeremy Maclin and now even the bombshell that dropped today where the Jets are looking to part ways with Eric Decker, either through release or trade. I mean, that to me is mind-boggling. So, I mean, I think we're going to have to start there. And we want to get your take on that, Matt. A, where do you think he could end up? And also, is there anything left to salvage fantasy-wise out of the Jets?
Well, I mean, you're
that second part's an easy answer.
Yeah. Look, that Jets wide receiver core right now is rough to look at. And, you know, they have Quincy Enunwa, who I did chart his season from last year for Reception Perception. And just in case any of your listeners aren't familiar, just to give the 5-second spiel here on what Reception Perception is, it's a methodology where I chart every single route a receiver runs and measures. Essentially, I'm trying to quantify, like, how good of a route runner they are, you know, how often they get open against different types of coverages, how often they run each individual route, and how successful they are at creating separation on each route. So if I reference any of that, that's kind of what I'm referring to there. With Quincy Enunwa, he's kind of an interesting player because he's a big-bodied guy with some really solid athletic measurables, but he definitely played more of kind of like almost like an Eric Decker type of role last year where he was that big slot receiver. And I think it's good for him that he's going to stay in that position because I don't think he was the type of player that tested out very well at beating man or press coverage, but he was pretty solid at getting open against zone coverage and on certain in-breaking routes. So I think he can actually put up some sneaky fantasy numbers because the volume's just, it's going to have to be there because who else is it going to go to?
Yeah.
They drafted two rookies this year. Ardarius Stewart, I think, could be another player that he's kind of similar to Enunwa, and that he's not how they're built or their athletic testing or anything like that, but he's similar in the way that he is an after the catch guy, probably more of a short to intermediate route runner. So I think that he's an interesting player that could get on the field rather quickly too. And it already sounds like the Jets were kind of expecting him to do so. And you mentioned that this Eric Decker news is pretty fresh. However, this is something that people had guessed for a while might happen, in that the Jets might part ways with Eric Decker, because we also saw them release longtime defensive stalwart David Harris today. And it's just kind of a full signal that they're just in a full rebuild mode, and Decker doesn't really make a lot of sense for them. So, Decker, where he's going to go next is a good question. I actually just tweeted right before we hopped on the show that, you know, like we just saw Jeremy Maclin get released, and a lot of people were wanting him to go to Baltimore. If I was the Ravens, I think I would prefer Eric Decker to Jeremy Maclin because I like Maclin as a big play threat. I like Maclin as someone that can really do more in a vertical style passing offense, and the Ravens certainly have some elements of that to the way they call plays. However, they kind of already have those players in Breshad Perriman and Mike Wallace. Decker would really be a nice fit as a possession type guy to take over for where Steve Smith left off. So I think the Ravens make a lot of sense for Eric Decker if they have the cap room to pull it off. And a lot of teams, quite frankly, have openings in the wide receiver core. So it'll be fun to track where those two end up.
Well, I can only imagine Twitter is going to be blown up because I'm a Bears fan, and there's going to be a lot of people saying, oh, now Eric Decker should come to the Bears. Oh, no, Jeremy Maclin's going to come to the Bears. You know, I'm getting a little tired of hearing the Bears need receivers, which they do, but it's like, how many are we going to stockpile
before it gets a little crazy? You know what it is now. It's going to be, oh, now the Jets are going to be the worst team in the league, not the Bears.
Well, thank God. I thought they already were. But, you know, I mean, that remains to be seen, I suppose. Speaking of Jeremy Maclin, though, Matt, I wanted to know. So, okay, Jeremy Macklin's gone from the Chiefs. And the Chiefs situation, who do you think benefits the most there? Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelce from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, so this seems to be the question of the week. You know, it's... Yep. This was a lot more unexpected than the Decker release, that being Jeremy Maclin's ouster from the Chiefs. So it certainly shakes things up. Now, I fall on the camp with Tyreek Hill that I think that he can develop into more of a traditional, more complete wide receiver. I was actually tweeting some charts out about this today. You know, a lot of people say, well, he's just another gadget player like a Cordarrelle Patterson. If you look at what Cordarrelle Patterson did as a route runner in reception perception and then what Tyreek Hill did as a route runner in reception perception, I mean, it's not even comparable how much better Hill was. So I think he's someone that did show in, you know, albeit very limited looks as a rookie when he was running more traditional routes. He scored a 72.7% success rate versus man coverage. That's a really strong score. So I think he showed some potential to develop further. So I don't see how this doesn't benefit Tyreek Hill. The question that people will have to ask themselves is just how much, because for fantasy, he's already really expensive. And I think he's definitely going to have a wide range of outcomes on a week-to-week basis.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be a player that obviously is going to hit big some weeks, because I still expect them to be creative with how they get him the ball in his hands. But at this point, it's hard to say that Travis Kelce can benefit too much more, because I think he was already priced in as like a top two or three tight end, and I think he will kind of remain in that way. To be honest, though, we'll go back and forth on a lot of these debates with these Chiefs players, but this is still the Chiefs offense, and as long as Alex Smith remains at the helm, I think we'll all be a little bit disappointed in the year-end output of these players. But I really do like Hill this year a lot. And in terms of whether I would take him on a fantasy team, it just really all depends on, and this is what I think, you know, us arguing about where he should be valued in drafts is kind of, you know, fruitless. It's kind of pointless, because at the end of the day, it really depends on who else you take on your roster. You know, if you've gone running back, and then maybe one wide receiver, and you're sitting there, that was the way you started, and you're stronger in your running backs than you are on your wide receivers. I don't know that I necessarily want to take Hill and have to be exposed to relying on him on a week-to-week basis. However, if you're going to build like a wide receiver heavy team, and he can be kind of your, you know, that you draft in the fifth or sixth round as like your weekly, you know, hammer, and he can be your third or fourth wide receiver, then I think you're really excited about the fact that you can be more exposed to his upside and a little bit more insulated from his weekly downside. So I think both these guys are it's going to be a long conversation about how this ends up affecting them. But I think I tend to fall on the more optimistic side with Hill than others.
Well, I tend to worry, though, because, see, I love the scenario that you painted. Maybe you can get Tyreek Hill fifth or sixth round, but I doubt we're going to be seeing that this upcoming draft season. You know, I feel like we're going to see Tyreek Hill fall somewhere in the fourth round, you know, fourth round of drafts. That's not somewhere I'm comfortable taking Tyreek Hill. So, you know, but then again, hey, you know, if I have to let him pass me, I have to let him pass. And that's just it, because I don't think I'm willing to take that kind of gamble. And if anything, I think with Jeremy Maclin leaving Kansas City, I think that just kind of pushes him up draft boards for people where I'm not comfortable. So I probably won't own Tyreek Hill on any of my teams, basically.
Yeah, I get that. And it's especially in the fourth round, that's really aggressive if you're going to have to take him within the top 20 wide receivers. And, you know, a little earlier in some MFL 10s, I was getting him in like the sixth round. But, you know, come August, that's probably not going to be realistic. Again, I would just say it all comes back to the construction of your team. If you're doing like a zero RB approach and you have three wide receivers already there, maybe you do think about that. But again, it's just really kind of saying like how much downside from a week to week basis can I really expose myself with Hill?
Yeah, I agree. You know, speaking of Jeremy Maclin, though, you know, now we covered what's going on in Kansas City. So Jeremy Maclin obviously hasn't been signed to a team yet. Is there a team right now that you see out there that benefits greatly from signing Jeremy Maclin today and would make him a fantasy value for this season.
I mean, almost anywhere is better than Kansas City, I would imagine. You know, because I mentioned that I think he would be best fit in like a vertical passing game, and I mean that's certainly not what comes to mind when you think about the Kansas City Chiefs. There, I think that if you look at Jeremy Maclin's route success rate chart in reception perception, some of his best routes were the deep go route, the deep out route. And those are some patterns that obviously, again, are not going to be used to their best in the Kansas City passing game. So I think this is kind of an exciting proposition for Maclin to end up somewhere. You know, I'd mentioned that I like Decker better in Baltimore, but at the same time, Maclin would certainly not be disappointing. We know Joe Flacco obviously does like to he can test defenses vertically with his arm, and I think that Maclin would be a nice fit there, because they're taking a really big assumption here with Breshad Perriman, that he is ready to just jump in and be a 100 target player opposite Mike Wallace. So I think that's one spot that obviously looks good for him. But right now it seems like Buffalo actually might be the favorite. He's visiting there today. We know that LeSean McCoy is actively trying to recruit him there. And I mean, that would certainly mess things up from like a target distribution standpoint, because this is not a high value, a high volume passing offense. Sammy Watkins would probably no longer have the ceiling from a season long perspective if he's healthy that he currently does right now, but that's a good fit for him in terms of, you know, kind of a 1B to Watkins' 1A. They obviously have a huge hole in their wide receiver core. They drafted Zay Jones in the second round, but to me, he's an ancillary complementary player, and I think that would be a really nice fit for Maclin. And he would have, you know, it would be a frustrating situation to predict week to week who is going to go off between Maclin and Watkins. But, and that's, again, presuming that Watkins is actually on the field, which is no guarantee. But Maclin would have some appealing target upside there.
So, Chris, let me ask you, same thing about Maclin. I mean, is there anywhere you see a good fit for Maclin right now?
I mean, it's got to be a place that likes to throw the ball. I mean, if you look back to what he did in Philadelphia, he was most successful and looked the best when the passes were being thrown deep. So, I don't know. Can I say the Colts? I feel like I say that every time a big name's released.
He's a Colts fan. Spoiler alert, Matt. You know, so
yeah, they do not have enough money to sign him or Decker, most likely.
Well, but, what do you mean, Chris? They have Philip Dorsett there. Why do they need Jeremy Maclin?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dorsett, he's going to be better than Jerry Rice someday, right?
Yeah. Oh, man, I always tease my friend who's a Colts fan here. I tease him all the time about that pick with Philip Dorsett. I'll never forget that.
Hey, you know what? Every single Colts fan was upset about that.
Oh, I can
None
imagine.
Of us were happy.
You know, I was thinking – Jeremy Maclin, here's my thing. I think that a spot that he could end up going to, and you know, I agree, Matt. You know, I've seen all the posts about, you know, LeSean McCoy banging the table for Jeremy Maclin to get to to Buffalo. But, you know, a place I think that he could fit well in, as far as the volume would go towards Maclin would go on this team. But I could see him going to 49ers, kind of being opposite of Pierre Garçon. I think that could be a really good wide receiver tandem there. You have any thoughts on that, Matt?
Well, they would have to really pony up the cash. And I think that is an interesting, because right now they're obviously not a contending team.
Obviously not. Yeah.
and both of these guys, Decker and Maclin, I think are probably, you know, they're getting into maybe the twilight stages of their career. They probably will want to default to a contender. But if you just look right now who has cap room and a wide receiver need and is also a contender, it's not really like a flush list of options. So he might be forced to go to a team like San Francisco if he is more focused on the money. There's another team in that division, though, that I think is interesting, and I'm not going to talk about the Rams because it kind of is the same situation, but the Arizona Cardinals right now. I think I'm a huge John Brown fan, and I think he's like the easiest bounce back candidate to spot this year because of, you know, his health concerns hopefully have been mitigated. He's a really great player to me and also has a ton of opportunity on his plate. But if the Cardinals still have any lingering doubts about Brown, in terms of his health. They don't have really anybody behind him that you can feel too confident in. They have J.J. Nelson, who weighs about, you know, as much as like a third grader. Then they have but just a bunch of unknowns after him. So they could be interested in a player. And that's another vertical passing offense that I think Macklin would fit into.
You know, I'd really like Macklin there. But, you know, you mentioned John Brown. And here's my thing with John Brown. You know, it's every year I hear somebody talking about John Brown. And the way I look at it is, he's not consistent enough for me to like him. And every year everybody's like, well, he's going to bounce back. And I'm like, well, when? And it's like, but he didn't. You know, and it's like what is it that leads you to believe that this could really be the year John Brown bounces back? Because I'm not convinced.
Well, I would say that we've already kind of seen it with John Brown in terms of what he did as a rookie. His pace when Carson Palmer was on the field was really similar to T.Y. Hilton's rookie year, which also was spent with Bruce Arians in Indianapolis. And then in his second season, he had 101 targets again. And then he had 65 catches, 1,000 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And that was with Michael Floyd in the lineup, also excelling towards the end of the year, and Larry Fitzgerald still present. So I think we've already seen him excel in a sort of smaller role, and I would thought he was on a clear upward trajectory through his first 2 years of his career. And then last year, it was just such a disaster in terms of his health. If you think about it, like right away in the training camp season, he had a concussion that Bruce Arians said towards the end of training camp, like, yeah, he just missed way too much time and fell behind at that point. And so that's why you didn't see him much on the field early on in the season. And then as the year went on, they discovered he has a sickle cell trait, which they struggled to manage. And he even said he just never felt like he could go, you know, full on. And that's pretty tough when you're an NFL player and you're used to playing at a certain speed and you can't adjust to it. So apparently they have that figured out. Then it also came out that he had a cyst on his spine, which I think also drained his energy. So it's like those three things combined definitely give you you can give him a mulligan for last year. And I think the player that we saw in 2015 was a really dynamic wide receiver in a loaded passing offense with two other high end options. Brown really did excel in his role, and he's also just a player that, yeah, he's definitely a deep threat, and I think it's easy to typecast him as like that's all he can do. But if you look at the routes that I chart for him, he's a guy that definitely creates separation at all levels of the field. So I think he can continue to get back onto that upward trajectory and kind of go along that smaller receiver archetype that T.Y. Hilton has done, where he's more than just a deep threat but can carry the load in the short to intermediate passing game. So I mean, I just think also opportunity purely dictates that, you know, right now he's the most established player outside of Fitzgerald in that receiver core. So even if Brown isn't as great of a player as I think he is, I think by default he's going to be one of the ones that has to catch passes there.
Where would you feel comfortable drafting John Brown, say in a PPR league?
So I think the most aggressive I could get would be like the eighth round. And right now you don't even necessarily have to do that. Cause at that point, anything beyond the eighth round, like it's all pretty much upside baked in. I think that we take way too much credibility in terms of like how much we can really predict this stuff. And I think like anytime after you get out of the fifth round, you're already starting to like throw darts at that point. So, at this point, he's, like I said, the opportunity is all there. And I think it, you know, even come August, I'll feel comfortable in kind of that eighth round range, hoping to strike gold on the bounce back. Cause it's been all positive report. And you know, how much can you really take from it? That's a good question, but it's been all positive reports, coming out of camp in the off season that he's, you know, back to full speed and that they've found out how to manage these health concerns he's had.
All right, well, you know, you've mentioned, you know, quite a few times about the reception perception that you do. And, you know, what I'd like to know, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know too, is there a receiver that maybe would surprise people that, you know, scored really well in your reception perception that you really like for next season?
I think that I don't know how much of a surprise this is if people have been following me for a while, but I'm a big fan of Willie Snead, and he's another player.
Yes.
he's a player that I liked last year, like going into last year, but the opportunity wasn't necessarily going to be there because he had two players playing in front of him in terms of Brandon Cooks and Michael Thomas that the team is obviously invested more in. But if you just and just take away the reception perception part of it right now, and I'll get into that in a little bit, but like think about Willie Snead's career to this point. I think it's undersold how impressive he really has been. You know, it's not that he's put up these eye popping stats, but this is a player that's a total unknown from Ball State, undrafted free agent that, you know, he didn't even like catch onto a roster necessarily in his first year, but because he was part of that 2014 draft class, but he was on practice squads, this, that, and the other that season. Then 2015 comes around, he catches on with the Saints. He's had over 100 targets his first two seasons. He's been productive in two different roles because in 2015, he played more of like an outside flanker role. And then 2016, when Michael Thomas came over and took over the split end role with Brandon Cooks moving around, Snead was essentially their primary slot receiver, caught over 70 passes, went over 800 yards. So he's shown through two seasons he can excel in two different roles. And now the Saints have pretty much said that they're comfortable with him as their second receiver, with their only addition being Ted Ginn, who I think is going to play a role in the offense, but is not going to outpace him for targets and opportunity there. And if you look at Willie Snead's reception perception, he was the only receiver that I charted this year that scored above the NFL average in success rate versus coverage on every single route on the route tree. So he's a guy that is a really precise route runner who creates separation at all levels of the field. And like I mentioned, he can line up inside or outside. And right now at this point, the Saints offense, you know, we know they throw the ball like almost no other team in the league. And, you know, Michael Thomas will obviously be the number one there, but it's hard to project out the Saints offense and not think that Snead's going to push for 120 targets. And if he does that in this offense, you got to do a little bit of mental gymnastics to think that he's not going to finish within the top 30-ish fantasy receivers. And that's like where he's getting drafted right now. So you're kind of looking at him as like a floor play at this point. And anything else you get extra is a nice little piece of gravy. So I love Willie Snead. I think he's a really underrated player, and now it's like the talent is going to meet with opportunity this year, and you got to be pretty excited about that.
Matt, you heard Nick call me Professor Chris at the beginning of the show. I am actually a math professor at Ball State.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go. I came to the right place.
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been, ever since last season, I feel like I talk about Willie Snead on every damn episode. I mean, I watched the guy play every single game in college, and he can honestly catch everything. Like, he is so underrated. He's so good. Drew Brees trusts him. I'm a huge Willie Snead fan. I actually posted an Instagram picture. It had Willie Snead on one side and a goat on the other side. You know, maybe he's going to be the guy.
I'm no, with you.
I love Willie Snead. It's good to hear you say that too.
You know, and you know what I like about Willie Snead too is right now with all the hype around Michael Thomas, and deservedly so, I feel like you can get Willie Snead at a really great value in the draft. So at least you're not going to be paying too much for him. And if he pans out the way we're expecting him to, I mean, it's just going to be great all around for anybody who grabs him this season.
I don't know. Doing a whole bunch of mocks, he is creeping up. Like, you're starting to have to take him in the sixth. Yeah, he's really going to the sixth now, yeah.
Oh, man.
And that's on Fantasy Football Calculator, and I believe on Fantasy Draft Wizard it's about the same. I know their ADPs are really different, but I think he's going in the sixth on both, so he's creeping up.
Mm. Yeah, and I don't hate that. I mean, I know maybe it's more on the aggressive side, but again, if you just look at like if you take the name out of the equation, because I mean, like we're saying, Willie Snead's not like a highly touted player, former UDFA. But at the same time, like, again, this is a starting receiver in the Saints offense who in his first two seasons as a professional has put up 900 and 800 yards. Like, he's definitely, like, we know he can play. And now at this point, he's going to be inheriting a pretty sizable opportunity. So he goes around some more guys that are maybe some bigger names like Emmanuel Sanders and DeSean Jackson, sort of in that range. But he's got all the opportunity in the world, and I think that we know he has the ability to capitalize on it.
Yeah, I'm bummed that he's moving up because that means I have to take him sooner because I want him on every fantasy team.
The bane of all of our existences.
Isn't that right? I mean, you know, so
we're going to cut this entire conversation out of the podcast so that
just to keep from listeners hearing this. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. This was just for us, Matt.
Very fair. That's fine with me.
But no, you know, you know, a sixth round, now I'm thinking about it. I mean, that's not too bad, like you said. I mean, it's a little on the aggressive side, but yeah, I mean, you got to think about what would be around at that point, and what you've established on your own team by then. Willie Snead could be really nice in the sixth round. I think I would be okay with him there. Just guess depending on how the chips fell. But a little bit more news came out today too, about rookie Mike Williams. He has some lingering back issues, will miss the rest of OTAs, but they're not sure exactly how long he may be out.
Herniated disc.
Yeah, yeah. So, Matt, you know, is it too soon to say, like, how this is going to affect Mike Williams just because we don't know the timetable of how long he'll really be out? I mean, because this is going to hurt his development quite a bit.
I don't think it's too soon to worry a little bit about this. Like you mentioned, this is going to put him behind the eight ball in terms of picking up the offense, getting communication with Phillip Rivers. And I think so much of Mike Williams' game depends on that because, you know, he's a player that separates good enough, kind of in that Alshon Jeffrey mold of like where he tests out in terms of reception perception, but he's not going to be a guy that's, you know, going to consistently create separation such as a player like Keenan Allen, who's already on the Chargers. So that timing and trust on those back shoulder throws and contested situations is going to be a big part of the equation for Phillip Rivers and Mike Williams. And if they're not able to get that timing down early in camp, that's going to just, again, put Williams behind the eight ball. And that's not necessarily a good thing in a receiver core like the Chargers that, you know, I feel like I say this every year, it's a loaded receiver core until they all get hurt by like week five.
Yeah. Injury curse followed them to LA.
Yeah. But damn it. If you look at that receiver group, it's pretty loaded. I mean, they've got Tyrell Williams who had 1,000 yards last year, who I really like as a guy who gets great separation on those crossing routes and can make plays in the open field. Travis Benjamin is a smaller guy, but they just paid him a lot of money. And he's another player that separates well on crossing routes too. And that's a big part of that Chargers passing offense, or at least it has been historically with Phillip Rivers. So, they've got guys, and even that Dontrell Inman is hurt right now, but he's even a capable veteran that showed pretty well last year. So right now they have a lot of options in the passing game, and I don't think that they'll feel too pressured to like force Williams if he's behind, in the preparation part of the game because of this injury. I don't think they'll be forced to push him out there too early if he's not ready. So I think this is definitely something to monitor and to be worried about, because this already was a tough receiver core to predict with all these bodies involved.
It seems like every year in June was, Phillip Rivers, he's going to be a great steal. You can get him in the 11th round. He's going to, you know, put up great numbers for you. Look at that wide receiver core. And then by week three, it's like, well, shit, I guess I'll stream.
Right. he has moments because he's elevated. I mean, players like Tyrell Williams and Malcolm Floyd, like these guys would come out of nowhere, you know, and be strong contributors with Rivers. But then even then they'd get hurt. And then by the end of the season, he's, you know, chucking interceptions because he's throwing to, you know, a bunch of jabronis out there. So it's rough. It's a rough life for Phil.
We do a little mini show called The Great Debate, and it's like say if it was me and Nick doing this, and we're actually going to record one later tonight. We each pick a player, and then we argue 2 minutes for, and then 1 minute to rebut, and then final thoughts at the end. So it's like an actual debate style argument. We did it over the waiver wire last year, and we did Tyrell Williams versus Will Fuller, and I took Tyrell after week one when Keenan went down, and that turned out to be a great call.
You really just threw your co-host right under the bus there on that one.
That was not me.
Don't worry.
Okay, good. Okay.
Come on. I'm going to have him later tonight anyways in a great debate. I mean, I'm arguing for Doug Baldwin against his Amari Cooper. I mean,
Baldwin versus Cooper.
That's a fun debate.
That's a good one. I mean, it's a little bit of a landslide in my favor, but I mean, it's a good one. You know. Chris, speaking of Chargers receivers, how do you feel about trusting Keenan Allen this season? I mean, this is some murky water we're getting into because now it's Keenan Allen. You know, he's gotten a bit of the injury bug listed, like he's got an asterisk right next to his name. So are you? You going to trust him this season or are you going to avoid?
Yeah, I'm going to trust him this season. And I'm not – I know he's been out for two straight seasons due to injuries, but a lacerated spleen is not really something that you know, that's very rare. It's not something that would add to him being injury prone. Now, if he were to, you know, tear his ACL this year, then, you know, then you can be done with Keenan Allen. Oh, I'm not drafting him until late if I draft him at all. But it was just one ACL tear. It was early on in the season. I think he's going to be back fully healthy. I don't have any qualms about drafting Keenan Allen this year.
What about you, Matt? Do you have any qualms about drafting Keenan Allen this season?
Yeah, I like what Chris said. You know, the injuries do seem to be random. Like, there's not a continual pattern where he keeps, like, ripping up the same knee or anything like that. So maybe he's just been unlucky. But, of course, like, if you take Keenan Allen and then, you know, he gets hurt and he misses a ton of games, you know, you kind of have to just take your lumps on that one because you knew that what you were getting yourself into. But
yeah,
right now, looking at his ADP on Fantasy Football Calculator, you know, he's wide receiver 20 in the early fourth round. I think that's a perfect range to take him. I mean, there are receivers going ahead of him like Sammy Watkins, Demaryius Thomas, Terrell Pryor, Devontae Adams. I would take him ahead of all of those guys.
Oh, yeah, I would too.
Even mm-hmm. a player, I think I'd rather have him than Alshon Jeffrey in Philly. The one thing, like, with Keenan Allen is, he's a fantastic player. Like, when he's on the field, with perception, he has one of the top five success rate versus man coverage scores that I've charted in season history, series history. He has a over 90th percentile contested catch conversion rate. I mean, he can definitely do it all. The question really is he going to be able to maintain that outrageous pace that he had in 2015 before he got hurt, where he was, you know, on pace to finish with over 130 catches? I don't know if he necessarily is going to have that kind of opportunity with, again, a really packed house there in the Los Angeles receiver core. However, I mean, at wide receiver 20, I think that is not really what you're expecting by taking him, and the ceiling is definitely much more appealing at that point.
Yeah, through 8 games that 2015 season, he was on pace to be the number one wide receiver in fantasy. If you were to take that throughout the whole season, he would have finished ahead of Julio and Brown that year.
Right.
And he came out on fire. I'm looking at just that week one, you drafted Keenan Allen, and he gets you 15 catches for 166 yards to start the season. That's just crazy.
I mean, yeah, the potential is definitely there, and you guys are right. I mean, you know, the injuries have definitely been random, so, you know, everybody should keep that in mind, is that it's not like he's been injuring the same body part every year or dealing with things that we see that take players out and put them out for their career. You know, this is something that maybe just might be unlucky. And so, yeah, the getting him in the fourth round really isn't that bad considering who is going ahead of him. So you might be getting a real steal there in the fourth round with Keenan Allen.
I mean, I would even argue if you go RB, RB, I'd be fine with Keenan Allen as my wide receiver one.
No, I would.
I would.
There's no way I am doing that. No, there, I would. That's just not my strategy. I like to have, for me, I like to have an RB1, wide receiver 1. I like the RB wide receiver approach, depending on, I guess, where I'm drafting, of course, and who's available. But that's the way I traditionally like to go, so that I have, I have what I need. But that's just me. I mean, you know, maybe you'd feel comfortable there, but if I went RB, RB, and then wide receiver, Keenan Allen would not be my wide receiver 1.
I think he's going to finish as a wide receiver 1. That's why I'd be okay with it. I've got him currently as my number 12.
Right, but I'd rather have him as my wide receiver 2 and finish as a wide receiver 1 with my wide receiver 1.
Well, yeah, everybody would rather have him. That's what I'm trying to go for there, is all I'm saying.
Come on now. But speaking of wide receiver 1s, okay, so Matt, tell me, with Tom Savage and Deshaun Watson at quarterback, is this the year DeAndre Hopkins can bounce back to that wide receiver 1 elite level?
See, I don't think so.
Wow. Okay.
Like, Hopkins is priced, I mean, fair enough at wide receiver 12, so you're taking him as kind of a back half wide receiver 1, but I really think that most of Hopkins' 2015 season obviously occurred. The best parts of it were in that first half of the season, where the Texans, you got to think, were a really bad football team. Remember, they got blown out by, like, the Dolphins when Lamar Miller ran all over them, which is ironic. Now he's their starting running back. But, you know, they were getting smoked by teams like that. But then in the second half of the season, they slowed down their pace. They, like, in the first half of the season, they were one of the top I think two or three teams in plays run per game. They slowed down the pace in the second half of the season. Their defense started to play better. They started running the ball more. O'Brien's teams have been, I think, first, fifth, and sixth in rush attempts in his 3 years as an NFL head coach. So they want to be a run-oriented team. They don't want to throw the football all over the place, where they had DeAndre Hopkins finish with 192 targets that year on way to a top fantasy finish. But when they have been a winning team, they have been a much slower paced team. They have been built on defense and run and the running game. And I realize that the quarterback upgrade is probably going to be tangible, going from, I mean, god awful Brock Osweiler to, you know, I mean, Tom Savage is still a huge unknown too. He didn't necessarily come in and like light the world on fire in that game against the Bengals that he did play. And Hopkins wasn't, you know, super productive, even though that was like what everybody was penciling in at that point. I think Hopkins is not on the elite talent level of like an Antonio Brown, a Julio Jones, or an Odell Beckham that, you know, no matter who is behind center, they're going to give you elite production. Hopkins has thrived with Brian Hoyer. He's thrived with some other quarterbacks on a game to game basis, but not necessarily
Ryan Mallett.
Right.
And, I mean, and Ryan Mallett.
he was absolutely productive, but then we saw him with poor quarterback play kind of fall off the map last year to a sub wide receiver 30 finish. But that, and I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he went from over 190 targets to 150 targets. I mean, that's a 40 target margin of error is huge. So I think it's really hard to tell yourself the story that if the Texans are going to be a good winning team, that they're also going to give the volume to Hopkins that he would definitely need to bounce back. And again, the quarterback play is still a question mark to me, whether Watson is ready to play year one. And if he's not, Tom Savage is still a big unknown to me.
Well, and not only did the targets seriously drop, I mean, 151 targets is still – that's still decent, but his catch percentage went from 58% down to 51%. So the quality of the targets were just awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And so I just think that – I think that, again, it's just – I don't know that he has the ceiling to necessarily be any better than wide receiver 12. So I think he could be like that back end wide receiver one, but I think you're drafting him at his ceiling, and I don't necessarily like to do that with players. I think that early part of 2015 kind of just overinflated expectations for Hopkins' career, because I think he's a really good wide receiver, but I just question whether he's at the elite level where he can produce no matter – who his quarterback is. And again, I just don't know that the volume is going to follow like it did in that early part of 2015. Like, he had one game where he saw 22 targets against the Falcons because, you know, again, the Texans were trailing the entire time. And that's just not what we've seen from the Texans over the 3 years Bill O'Brien has coached there.
So, I, you know, it's interesting. At first, I was like, wow, okay, you don't like DeAndre Hopkins, I'm surprised. But, you know what, your argument makes a lot of sense to me, especially when you break it down that it's most likely going to be the scheme that hurts Hopkins and possibly the quarterbacks because they are such unknowns. But I think overall, though, we can agree that the scheme is going to hurt them more because they're just a run-first defensive type team. And that's what they like to do. They like to slow down the game, and they don't like to throw as much as they did when Hopkins broke out and became elite level that he was that year. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of people are going to be reaching for DeAndre Hopkins. Hopefully they listen to this and will maybe back off and realize maybe they shouldn't try to reach for him, maybe try to go for somebody else. You know, but like so, Matt, you said that he was about, what, wide receiver 12 right now. Mm-hmm. What are some wide receivers that might be below him that you would take before DeAndre Hopkins in a draft?
Well, your guy Doug Baldwin, I would take over him for sure. Allen Robinson, I like a little bit better than Hopkins. They're kind of in similar situations, but I think that the Fournette pick, while it will probably take away volume from Robinson and that he might not push for 150 targets again. I think it will make the offense better overall. Even if they do become more of a run-oriented offense, I think that that a good running game will put Jacksonville into better game situations. And we've already seen Allen Robinson have a 1,400-yard, 14-touchdown season with Blake Bortles behind center, whereas the Texans are still going through some quarterback changes. So that's kind of I think I would take him there just again because while I don't know that Robinson is going to hit that 2015 fantasy season ceiling again, I do think that he can have a little bit more of a safer outlook than Hopkins does. And after that, it gets a little bit dicey. I mean, I'm looking at ADP right now, and like Alshon Jeffrey is kind of in the same situation. Devontae Adams, I don't know that I want to take him in the third round either. The third round is kind of an ugly area for wide receivers. I think I would take Keenan Allen over Hopkins, but I don't feel great about that either. So maybe I'm being a little conservative with the projections for Hopkins, but at the same time, kind of other options in that area aren't exactly like screaming at me other than Baldwin and Robinson that I would definitely take over him.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you mentioned that Willie Snead was probably your one of the surprising receivers that scored high in your reception perception. Who was a surprise that scored really low in your reception perception?
Some guys necessarily weren't that surprising, but have kind of always, like a guy like Devontae Parker didn't score well for the second year in a row in reception perception. He had a 51.9% success rate versus man coverage. That was an improvement from his rookie year, but still was really rather low. And if you remember, so many of the reports out of Miami last year where Adam Gase was really frustrated with Parker because he wasn't taking, you know, preparation seriously in terms of like getting enough sleep or his dieting, and just that's why he was always kind of having these nagging injuries. The reports out of Miami now are that he's, you know, taking some of that more seriously, and he's taking a more detailed, nuanced approach to his craft, and that could really see his reception perception improve from year two to year three. So I think this is a kind of a big make or break year for Parker for me, because he has the talent to do it, but in terms of, again, technique and nuance and route running, he's always been a player that's been really disappointing. He had the second lowest, like I said, success rate versus man coverage of all the receivers that I charted this year. Another player was Kelvin Benjamin, who saw his success rate versus man coverage go down almost 8 percentage points from 2015 to 2016, and his success rate versus press coverage crater almost 24 percentage points. So Benjamin really was legitimately awful last year from a route-to-route perspective. I don't think that he is, you know, a lost cause, because he still – what he does best is win the ball in tight coverage, and he did have an above 50th percentile success rate on contested catches. So that is, again, remains his best trait. But those were two players that were really disappointing that jump off the map to me.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, from – I saw those same articles you saw about Devontae Parker. So for me, I completely agree. It's a make it or break it type of season for him. But, you know, there's still going to be those players this season that we're going to advise people to probably avoid. Is there anybody that off the top of your head, you've been banging the table for people just to avoid, to stay away as far as wide receivers are concerned?
In the early rounds, it's hard for me to take Jordy Nelson at wide receiver 6. And I know that seems crazy because just had 97 catches and 14 touchdowns last year, and he's Aaron Rodgers' top target. But his reception perception was a little bit disconcerting to me. And you can paint this two different ways with Nelson. So, you know, you could figure out which story you like best, because in the first half of the season, we saw Jordy Nelson really struggle. His success rate versus man coverage was at 58.1%. And his success rate versus press coverage was at 58%. So that was rough. Those are really poor scores. It's way off what he was doing earlier in his career. But then in the second half of the season, we saw Jordy Nelson move into the slot more. His slot snaps jumped from 16.5% to 34.4%, and his success rates increased to 66.7% to 71.1%. So we saw a tangible difference. And you can take that two different ways. You can say he was playing more inside, which is good because he needs to do that more as he ages and he's obviously lost a step. Or you could say he's getting right back to form because it's the second half of the season in a year after he tore his ACL. So you can, again, take that two different ways. But to me, what's a little bit worrisome there is, are we getting close to that proverbial age cliff with Jordy Nelson? Because, again, his scores are just so much lower than from what he was doing earlier in his career. And there's just a bevy of other options there in the Green Bay passing game. I know everybody kind of hates Randall Cobb at this point, but the one person who doesn't hate Randall Cobb is Aaron Rodgers. If you remember after the Giants playoff game where Cobb went off, Rodgers was really specific in saying to this reporter on the sideline, we're a better offense when 18's on the field. So as long as Cobb's part of that organization, he's going to play a role. Adams is going to get his. So I don't know. Jordy Nelson at wide receiver six seems really aggressive. When he comes up there in the second round to pick him, I can't take him over, certainly not over a player like AJ Green, Michael Thomas, T.Y. Hilton, and even Dez Bryant. So those are players that I like over Nelson at this point right now.
Okay. But you would take Jordy before DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not crazy, guys.
That was my test question for you, Matt. I just want to say, you know.
we do have to get to that. You said the proverbial age cliff at some point. I mean, the dude's 32 years old. How much longer of elite production does he really have?
I mean, he's 32 years old. He had the ACL injury. But, I mean, this is Aaron Rodgers we're talking about as quarterback. And you know, he gets as much as I hate Aaron Rodgers being a Bears fan, you know, I still can respect the guy for what he's able to do with his receivers. And, you know, Jordy has been his favorite. But you guys are right. I mean, the age does come into play at some point. It always does. We're always asking ourselves, when is that year going to be it for that player? And so maybe this is the year. It's going to be a tough one, but I definitely can see where you're coming from, Matt. And it's a good argument against Jordy Nelson. You know, maybe this is it. Maybe we should be worried. My concern though is for Randall Cobb is that, you know, yeah, Aaron Rodgers may be glowingly happy when he's on the field, but it just seems to me that the red zone production isn't there for Randall Cobb when Jordy Nelson's around. And even when Jordy Nelson was out that one year with the ACL, I mean, Randall Cobb was just awful as a wide receiver one. So that's something that concerns me, too.
Yeah, I know. And it's not necessarily like a pro-Randall Cobb argument as much as – even though where he's going in drafts right now in the late rounds – or, well, I mean, the eighth round in fantasy football calculator. But sometimes he'll even slip to the 10th round in NFL 10s. Like, he'll go pretty late. And, you know, he's going to probably push for 90 to 100 targets in an Aaron Rodgers-led offense. Like, he could end up being a value at that spot. Because he was another player who I think wasn't healthy last year. He had ankle injuries and all of that. So maybe that's why he hasn't performed of late. But yeah, I mean, I think that the idea that Randall Cobb that we saw in 2014 is ever going to be back again is at this point a pipe dream. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, so we talked about receivers you like to avoid. We talked about Willie Snead being somebody that, you know, you really liked from your reception perception standpoint. Is there a receiver, though, outside of the reception perception stats? Man, you have to change the name of that reception perception to something shorter. So you don't have to keep saying reception perception.
But it rhymes, though.
It rhymes, but it's a long name for repeating it multiple times.
Listen, let me tell you, I'm with you. I hear you on that, and I'm very open to what you're saying. One, I would say it's a little too late in the game to change it at this point. And two, listen, one of my friends actually named it. If I had named it, oh, it would be something terrible. It'd be like Armin's charting methodology for receivers, and you'd have to say that five times fast.
These guys catch good.
Right. Yeah. Good catchers by Harmon. So like, yeah. Something like that. Good luck.
Well, at least it's marketable, you know.
I got a question about your reception perception, kind of. As I was going through, I create the weekly rankings for Sleeper Wire. This offseason, I was going through and analyzing, okay, how close really were we? And I found wide receiver was the one that was the hardest to predict. Is that why you chose to focus on wide receivers, or was there some other reason why you chose to do a reception perception instead of like a rushing perception?
Well, I mean, I could really care less about being like the most accurate predictor of you know, fantasy success or whatever. I mean, that's not what I'm interested. That's not so, I know that sounds weird to say, but it's not, that's not really what I'm trying to get out of reception perception. Why I wanted to do it was, you know, think about when I started, it was like that 2014 season. That was when this, you know, historic class of wide receivers was coming in terms of Odell Beckham and Sammy Watkins, Mike Evans, et cetera. That draft class was super hyped up. And a lot of those guys are, again, some of the most prominent receivers in the league that we're talking about right now. So it was a good time to get in on analyzing wide receivers. And I've always just found the position so fascinating, because it's really this great one-on-one matchup between the cornerback and wide receiver. I think so many of the personalities of pass catchers is very fascinating to me. And also it was like I needed something to distinguish myself in a career that I had no business getting myself into. And here we are. So, I've always been fascinated by the wide receiver position. And at the time when I was looking to start the series, it was really popular and more of them were cropping up. So that really had more to do with it than like trying to predict fantasy success, because that's an important thing to note with reception perception. Obviously, I'm charting how good of a route runner these players are, you know, maybe how talented they are. But as we know, talent is only a certain percentage of the equation when it comes to predicting fantasy success. Like, again, Willie Snead's a great example of a player who I've always liked in the lens of reception perception, but not necessarily always presented with the opportunity to be a fantasy star. Now this season, we might see the two meet up, and that's the beauty of it when you know the talent is there and also the opportunity comes. But there can be players like a Tyler Lockett that I really like in reception perception, but the targets just aren't always going to be there. So it's important to remember that while I'm talking about how talented some of these players are, you know, there are other parts of the equation that need to be there for fantasy success.
Matt, we're starting to dwindle down on our time here, so I just have like one more question for you about receivers. You know, I'm sure as you have as well over the past month or so, have been really probably heavy on these rookies that came out of the draft. Is there one that sticks out in your mind, particularly at the wide receiver position, that you like for this season?
For this season specifically, I mean, Corey Davis is obviously the favorite there in terms of a guy that, you know, he went fifth overall. The Titans have a pretty big gap in their wide receiver core. I mean, the smart money would be that he's going to be the most productive rookie this year, but there are a few other guys in interesting spots, none for like super immediate impact, but I like Carlos Henderson down the line, and I think he could be surprising this year, because if you look at the Denver receiver, do you guys know who the third leading receiver in terms of catches was for the Denver Broncos last year after Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders? Could either you guys know who it was?
I guarantee it's not Cody Latimer.
Well, okay. Of course, like, I mean, no. You need to guess a real person.
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
It was their second string running back, Devontae Booker. So that's what we're dealing with the Denver receiver corps. Obviously, they're not a super high flying passing offense or whatever, because, you know, they don't necessarily have a great quarterback, but there's opportunity to be had in that receiver corps. And I really like Carlos Henderson as a player who can come in and to essentially take some of that, because he's a player who's really good after the catch. They need more playmakers there. So he's someone that I think could be kind of sneaky. I don't know that he's going to be, you know, a week to week guy that you can count on. I would say most likely not. However, I do think that he can come in and make some big plays, and eventually ingratiate himself well enough to push for starting snaps down the line, because these two receivers ahead of him, that being Emmanuel Sanders and Demaryius Thomas, are starting to get into the latter part of their career.
So he could be maybe more beneficial for the Broncos as an NFL team rather than fantasy relevant.
Right. And I think there could be weeks where he like pops off, because I think he'll return kicks. Like I said, he's a big play sort of. He's a big play threat. So that's really what I'd look at for him, is maybe in, you know, some DFS formats or something in high scoring games. But more really this wide receiver core, like if you think about John Ross, Mike Williams, some of those early players, they didn't really go to landing spots that present immediate opportunity. Mm-hmm. Really, Corey Davis is the one that I think for fantasy you're going to be paying the most attention to.
Which makes sense. I mean, it's, like you said, when you break it down, there's nobody that sticks out. Like, you think of even Zay Jones. He went to Bills. He's behind Sammy Watkins right now. And then potentially Jeremy Maclin if he goes there. The Rams, I mean, they got Cooper Kupp and, you know, Josh Reynolds. I mean, we don't know what Jared Goff. Yeah, and Jared Goff's still there. So, I mean, we don't know how that's going to develop. I don't know. But, I mean, you know, you got to say to yourself, well, I mean, somebody's got to get that ball. So it's very possible one of them emerges, maybe. You know, I mean, we know what Tavon Austin is, and we know what Robert Woods is. So maybe one of them emerges out there. I mean, but you're right. I mean, of all the rookie wide receivers, though, Corey Davis seems like probably the most fantasy impactful for this season. So, but that's pretty exciting, if I had to say so myself. But what's not exciting, Matt, is that our time is just about up. I mean, you've said it all on here. I don't know how much more you can say on here to satisfy us and probably our listeners, but you've done it all here. So thank you very much, Matt, for being on our show today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Yeah, I mean, if you would just like if you wind me up, I can go for hours and hours and hours talking about this stuff. So this was a lot of fun. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Tell everybody out there where they can find you, support you, and show you some love.
Oh, well, who cares about, you know, supporting me or whatever? I'm insufferable. Don't listen to me. But if you like some of the reception perception stuff I talked about today, I would encourage all your listeners to go to receptionperception.com. to purchase the 2017 Ultimate Draft Kit brought to you by the Fantasy Footballers that I've officially partnered with to feature all of this reception perception data. There's profiles on their top 50 NFL wide receivers, all 19 rookies that I charted, and more advanced metrics on wide receivers than you ever knew you needed. So if you go to receptionperception.com, there's a picture of my ugly mug there, and if you hover the mouse over my face, you can click the link there to buy it, and there you go.
You guys definitely need to check out the reception perception. I mean, listen to all the stuff that he had to say here on the show today. I mean, I found that all of your information today was very valuable to us, and I'm sure the listeners are going to find that stuff very helpful to them and hopefully help them win a championship. So, Matt, thanks again for being on our show, man. We really appreciate it once again, and we're looking forward to having you on again in the future.
My pleasure. You guys know how to find me anytime.
Chris, can you tell everybody out there where can they find us and support us?
All right, first, you go on to our brand new website, sleeperwire.com. I guess it's the same URL, but it's been completely remodeled. It looks fantastic. You can follow us on Twitter at Sleeperwire Show. Nick's on there at Sleeperwire Nick. I'm on there at Seymour Sleeperwire. You can also follow me on Instagram at Professor Chris SW, and I'm on Sleeperbot at Professor Chris.
You know, we love doing this for fantasy football purposes, but we also have another reason why we do this show. We have a dear friend of ours. His name is Rob. He suffers from chronic Lyme disease. He's bedridden. He can't, you know, he doesn't have the type of lives that we all get to enjoy. He's just constantly in pain. And we're just trying to help raise some money for him to get the treatments he needs. So please, if you guys can, if you can spare a dollar, you know, whatever you can give, was greatly appreciated. Just go to GoFundMe.com/RobJR, or you can go to SleepWire.com and go get the link there for Rob's GoFundMe page. We really appreciate anything you guys can donate, so please go do that. All right, Chris, I think this is it for the show. Matt Harmon was a wonderful guest on the show. We really, really loved having him on. And so with that being said, for Chris and Matt Harmon, I'm Nick Sunwell saying so long, everybody. Good night.
Peace.